I'm a Jenner from Midnight, Mississippi. When Harrison called me a couple months ago, he called me at the worst possible time. I was in the middle of a surprise audit by the Department of Labor. I thought I was putting that Harrison off. I said, Harrison, I really don't really market seed. I'm 100% with the oil mill. He said, well, there's your topic. So that's what I do at the Midnight Gen. I'm 100% with the Delta Oil Mill of Jonestown, Mississippi. It wasn't always like that. And in 2002, we had a very wet harvest season, and the seed quality went down. And at the time, the oil mills had a very strict grading process, grading standards. And so what happened was I stopped doing business with them, began whole seed. And that worked pretty well, but it was a struggle. We don't have a seed house at the gen, so the logistics, it was always a struggle to move the seed. But I did that for a few years, and then one summer, something happened. I nailed the market. It was one of those times when everything was just right. I forward contracted at the high and was very smug and proud of myself. And the season rolled around, and what happened was the buyer just kept putting me off. He wouldn't take delivery of the seed, and I realized I've got problems here. I need to either build a seed house or change my strategy. And coincidental with that, the Delta Oil Mill came along and offered a lot more options. First of all, they reduced their grading standards to the NCPA standards, which are less stringent. And they offered four marketing options, which really appealed to me. And I'll go over those real quickly. First of all, to be eligible for these four marketing options, I had to guarantee 100% of my seed to the oil mill. And at the same time, the oil mill agreed to accept 100%, which in this day of capacity underutilization, that doesn't seem very important. But some of you know the president of the Midnight Gen, Peter Harston. He told me a story that back, I think it was in the 80s, there was just no storage for seed, and cotton gins would have to shut down periodically because there was no place to take the seed. And he said, yeah, Robert, a man showed up at the gin. He had driven here all the way from Oklahoma in an old truck. It even had a gasoline engine. And I loaded him up, and he handed me a check. And he said, I knew it was a bad check. And he said, but I was just so proud to get rid of that seed, I let him go. So we have they guarantee to accept 100%. And, as Paul said, the counterparty risk is less, considerably less with the oil mill. But the four options. First, there's the regular old rebate program where you deliver the seed. They have set a price, an advanced price, and you accept that price. At the end of August, they send you a rebate check if there is one. The second option, it's the same thing, advanced price plus rebate, but you're able to forward contract. So during the off season, if you see a price you like, you forward contract it, and then you will receive a rebate as well several months later. Okay, the third option, and the third and fourth option really are based on whole seed prices to some extent, and there's a booking price without a rebate. Typically, the advance price, almost always advance price at the scales, is lower than whole seed prices. And so in this third option, you're able to forego a rebate but accept the price, which is very similar to the current whole seed prices. And the final thing is the storage program. In storage program, for $12 flat rate, you're able to store the seed up until the 1st of July, and at any point in that time, you can price it at the going rate. And that, you know, that works pretty well too. So with those four, options, I feel like if I don't get a fair price for my seat, it's my own fault. And it's worked real well for us.
Thanks, Robert. I was just going to add a little bit about California. One of the things that we have out there is we have fuzzy and Pima seed, and the spread currently is probably $19 a ton, less value in the Pima, and then you have to crack the Pima also so the cows can get the nutrition. But and as Dwayne said, that contracts in California are normally 1,000 to 500, but now they're 100 to 250. The dairymen are, they're struggling, although things are getting better. But the one thing that I saw in last year's season was that when we lost half our value of our hay, cottonseed remained the strongest commodity when all the other feed crops were really falling off. It was still something that we, when you talk about getting a hit in the face, all our crops hit us in the face, but cottonseed was pretty good. With that, we're going to open up for questions of the panel. Ed?
We don't really market cottonseed to the beginning lab, but a couple, we are interested in value added, and either Kirk or Dwayne, you mentioned cracking Pima. What is that currently adding to the value of the ton? Percentage-wise or something?
Well, it cost us about $4. Well, we charged $4 a ton to crack it. Bottom line, we're not going to move it if it's not cracked. I mean, unless we're going to send it to a facility wants to use it for something other than dairy feed, they won't feed it unless it's cracked because it'll just run right through them.
What kind of price differential are you dealing
with? Right now, I sold some cottonseed Tuesday, and as I said, about $19 spread right now. No, actually, that's just the price after we crack it. One thing about Pima, though, this year we're running about 840 pounds per 500 pound of lint, and our fuzzy runs about 700. So you've got that added value also.
I got a question. This may be for Paul. Why is it we have such a problem in price discovery for cottonseed, unlike we do for other commodities? Is it because we don't have a futures contract to help us find that price? Sellers and buyers and moves up?
You mean the volatility?
Yes, and volatility in
price. The short answer would be that the freight spreads. Most genders don't know what the cost, whether trucking or rail to different markets. In the market right now, there's cottonseed that ships from North Carolina via Georgia all the way to California. A ginner doesn't know the destination markets, what I'm getting at. He doesn't know that a container is probably $30 margin and they're going to Busan, Korea, or he just doesn't know the freight involved, the destination markets. What his seed is worth in Monroe, Wisconsin, or Dinuba, California. He trades it on an origin market. He knows that South Georgia is $200 for January, but he doesn't know the time you put on the freight, what it's worth at the destination.
And not having, I mean, you've got a futures, but it's not really used. And that's why what I reiterated, like Paul said, the most more people you can talk to.
We may want to go to the microphone, I'm sorry.
You know, on price discovery, as far as I'm concerned, you don't really have a futures market. I guess you do have a futures market, but it's not really. They tried it, but it didn't work, and it wasn't really used when it was there. The more people I can talk to, the better my price discovery. But you're exactly right. Paul's right. We do a lot of containers. I know what the freight is from Surrency, Georgia to the port because I do that. But I don't have any clue of what's going on in Korea, Japan, or whatever. But you know, I'm trying to get all the prices I can. Now, we're in peanut business. You think price discovery is bad in cottonseed. The peanut's even worse because there's about four players. And I guess the more people we can keep in this industry, and that's why it's so vital that we have, in my opinion, the oil mills and the brokers and the Lansings and everybody to talk to more people so that you can get more. That's the only way I know to get price discovery
but
for
it
us.
It seems that there would be a price for the commodity and then the freight, and which it is, which would still allow you to, what is the value of that commodity?
And it is, but it's but what I found is it's according to when you call and who you call. I mean, there's a price. Like you said, there's a South Georgia price. But it's up to me to go out there and find the person to give me that price that day. Lansing may be out of the market that day. You know, I call it to Chris Trosi a lot. And I may say, Chris Trosi, I say, what's the price? And he's like, well, here's what I've been hearing, but I'm not really, you know, in the market at that point. There's nothing, you can't go on the computer to find something. You know, that's why it's vital, like I said, for me, I feel like it's vital to talk to somebody somewhere every day because, you know, what I found with the volatility in this market, this kind of scared me is one day it's moving so quickly. You know, we used to have a, you know, $20, $30 over the whole life of the contract, and now it's moving a lot more volatile.
While you're there, let me ask you, I had another question when you were talking about containers and reacting based on the market and even dollar values when you're loading containers. How fast are you able to react, and what does that cause you in logistics, or do you leave that up to the brokers and the merchant guys?
No, the containers become a logistic opportunity. I don't. My daddy always said you had opportunities, not problems. But if we did not, and listen to Wayne, if we did not have a seed house, and I didn't reiterate that enough, I would hate to have to do what I do without a seed house. Logistically, I could not do containers without a seed house. Because I would be so worried that I don't know when the boats are coming. That's all up into the Lansings or the whoever I'm dealing with. So they're giving me bookings, but those bookings are 5-10 containers. So I have to have a way to not to shut that gin down. And that's why I use the oil mill and the seed house. Without that seed house, it would change my marketing a lot, and I would dare say it would affect me $10 to $15 a ton probably.
How much of the variation in price of cottonseed is due to variation in quality of the seed? And how much of the seed that you sell and or buy is analyzed? You know the quality of it.
Who do you want to answer that?
All of you.
In California. Well, I'm not answering it because I'm the smartest. I'm just standing up here. Our seed, of course, I'm lucky, as Sid said, we've got the dairies all over the place, and probably a lot of the dairies that Duane at one time were sending to in Los Angeles, they're now up in our area because we got alkali ground and they're good for dairies. But we're 100% covered. We can store 17,000 ton in our seed. So we don't have damaged seed, and the nutritional value holds up all year. So we don't ever have a problem, and so we don't get rejected seed or devalued seed because of quality in California. Now,
I think it goes back to where it's going to go. If it's going to the oil mill, and you have, and like in our case where we're on the coast, I wouldn't ship anything direct. Without somebody that's got air to put on it. We have to put air on our seed all the time. It'll get hot on planting seed, for example, that going out to Lubbock nowadays when they were catching. Delta Pine has quit doing, and so has Bear, using our area to produce planting seed because by the time it gets from Corpus out to Lubbock, it's hot. And so they're very nervous about that. But On the other hand, we get our seed checked for our whole seed. I'm not interested in saving high quality. What the oil mill would really want with high oil content and low free fatty acid, I'm not really interested in saving that and marketing it, because we're going to get a pretty good price from my oil mill. But on the other hand, when we have what the oil, what would be, when they grade it, say 70-60%, the value to me drops off quite a bit. But the feeding value, and we have that sent off, we send it to West Texas. We work with brokers, and they routinely get the feeding value of it. And so it may still have 95% of the feeding value, but it's worth very little to the oil mill. So, but you got to know that. And the only way you can do that is to some seed. I've kept seed before that 1999, we had a Hurricane Brett. Tarps blew off, tarps leaked, and the seed was, you know, I think the minimum they paid was a 40% grade, but the grade actually got down to, for oil mill purpose, 10-15%. But when we put air on that and kept it 5 or 6 months, it had good feeding value, and we marketed it, and it did a good job.
Follow up a little bit on Harrison's question about the futures market. You know, about 10 years ago, Minneapolis Grain Exchange had a futures market, and it was a bad timing. The market was absolutely flat, so they delisted it. But what I'm hearing today is a lot of talk about price volatility, price discovery. It seems like a perfect mechanism to hedge that risk. But I'm also hearing that there is still really no interest in asking them to bring that contract back. I'm just asking panelists if there is any interest in using a futures contract, or asking the mayor of the strange team to bring that contract back.
Paul, why don't you answer that? The problem that you run into with any futures contract, especially what the problems that we ran in with a cottonseed futures contract, is you need a lot of players. You need a lot of liquidity. You just can't have 10 people using cottonseed futures. You know, that can actually add more volatility if there's only a few players buying and selling cotton futures. But for it to work, like any, whether it be a soybean meal contract or a grain contract, you need a lot of players. I hate to bring up speculators or funds, but we just found it was too illiquid for the futures contract. The way our business model, when you're trading whole seed, as far as what we do, especially volatility, is to create a business model that's liquid, to have as many origins and have as many destinations as possible, that if you're wrong in the market, you can pick out the market that's your best and sell that market. The problem you folks have is that you're inherently long, is that I can short. I can go out and sell 20,000 tons of cottonseed, having a position, opinion in the market, buy it in later, be long. And if I'm wrong, I sell, or if I, you know, I have so many markets that I buy and sell to. I would suggest if you're in a particular region, like I think Mr. Fount said, I mean, if there's any of my customers in here, I got some of these that sell 100% of their seed to me. Okay, please leave the room before I make this next comment, but you need to keep your doors and selling to as many people as you can, to as many different markets, to help create that liquidity model. Because if you're wrong, if Lansing's not in the market, then you can sell to Penny Newman or you can sell to Chickasha. But you have to create a model, my opinion, on liquidity. And, you know, developing places at your gin, the load containers, load rail, go to the oil mill, have a seed house. Those are all just examples of liquidity.
How closely does cottonseed track soybean futures?
You know, that's a great question, because I get that answer. Well, if beans are up $15, how come you aren't up on your cottonseed bid? Long term, it does. And the fact of all, you know, cottonseed from the dairy level competes with every feed ingredient. It's a bypass protein. I almost go to say it tracks hay, like you brought up. It competes with hay, but if dairies are kicking cottonseed out or adding more in, they'll do a combination. If they're replacing it with a combination of three things, maybe more hay, more energy like corn hominy, more of a protein source. But tracking hedging soybean meal with cottonseeds, we've looked at that, and that could be a double whammy. I've seen cases where cottonseed prices have gone down and the meal market's gone up. Then you got two problems.
thing that affects us in California, every Monday I've got four guys call me and tell me what their prices are, what I could sell it for that day. But on Tuesday, there might be a rumor of Penny Newman bringing a boat in from Australia or a rail car coming from Arkansas, and that price will drop $50 that next day. So that's one thing we worry about, the boats and the train, the rail cars, you know, out there. Is there any other questions? Ed.
The gentleman that showed the whole load of pipe seed in one hand, that looked to be a couple of things. It looked to be a very high literacy content. Is that typical in the Southeast? But the second question really is that in the West, when we used to have oil mills, they complained about literacy content, but that was a high cost to them, that literacy removal as part of the crushing process, first and second cut letters. How does that economics fit in with your with the oil seed operation now? Litters removal and litters content.
I think litters are about 10% or so of the volume on that seed, 10-12%. And by far, litter removal in the lint room is one of the costliest operations in the oil mill. The second cut litters is where most mills are now producing. The economies of just having the first cut, try to capture that market, are kind of fading. So second cut linters are primarily what's used.
Was that picture typical of linters content seed you received?
Yeah. Anyone else?
I got a question for Rock and Roll. You said you had four options. What point do you make the decision to which option you're going to use?
Yeah, well, I should have stood up earlier on one of these other questions. I'll get directly to it, I guess. I have a background in futures, and I love to track the markets. And what you have to realize that when you're talking about cottonseed, there are two distinct markets. There's the whole fuzzy seed market, and then there's the oil mill market. And those oil mill products, oil meal and oil, cottonseed oil, they're priced, their basis contracts based on soybean products. So when I make a decision, it's based on a soybean chart. That's what I watch. And makes it much easier. My mind is so completely different from Paul's here. He's fundamentalist. He understands that whole fuzzy seed market, and that's it's almost beyond me. It's just for pricing, I watch the chart. Now, as far as those three options, I've used all four of those options. I've held it. I didn't particularly like that because our fiscal year, the gen, ends the last of February. So I don't feel like I'm getting my $12 storage, getting my money's worth out of storage. But yeah, I've used them all, and it just depends on what I'm looking at, on the charts.
But do you have to commit at a certain time on how many units you're going to do each one, or is it just?
Oh yeah, if I price them in advance, you know, at the price of given.
But you don't have to tell them which avenues you're going in. Oh
no.
It's just fluid all throughout the year.
That's correct, yes.
Anything else?
If not, thank you, gentlemen.